Industry Leaders Podcast with Arbor XR. Your host, Brad Scoggin. I'm the CEO and one of three co-founders of Arbor XR. My co-host, Will Stackable, is also a co-founder and our CMO. And today we get to sit down with Dan O'Brien, who is the GM of the Americas for HTC Vive. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Brad, Will, thanks for having me. It's great to see you guys and excited for today.
Well, HTC has a long, rich history in VR and has really been a leader for some time. I'd love to hear about kind of the entry into VR and how you made the shift from initially entering in the kind of the consumer entertainment space to now focusing on enterprise.
Yeah, thanks. We actually, it was interesting. We built this team. It was kind of a little bit of a skunkworks team inside of HTC. And this was back in 2013. We were making, Under Armour products and health products. We were making cameras. We were making a bunch of stuff. And Peter Chow, our CEO, and Cher Wong, our chairperson, was, asked me to go over and meet Valve and see this prototype that they had built, which was just a kind of this amazing fiducial marker tracking, headset that had smartphone panels in it. It looked kind of like a really fancy Lego. It had soldering burns. It had Velcro. It had hot glue on it. They asked us to, partner and to work together. And I agreed to go work on that project. And so I led the first product to market. And, we started that in 2014. We started with developers in October of 2014. And then, we had our first dev kit in 2015, our second dev kit in January 2016, and our first commercial product in April 2016.
I know we talked about this on the run-up to the pod, but man, that first Vive with the incredible tracking, the base stations, we talked about how even if you dropped them, they still worked. I have such good memories of that headset. And what a fantastic, first consumer product for you guys.
It was critical that we came to market correctly with the right first product. We wanted to have room scale. We wanted to have 90 frames per second. I mean, I remember in 2014 in October, and we had 30 developer teams, in there, and a lot of those companies are still kicking today. And I'm pretty psyched for those dev teams, and they were all indies. And it was my first foray. I was a real hardware guy, hardware and software from the smartphone business. And we met all these developers and we said to them, hey, you're going to develop content at 90 frames per second. And the air just kind of like was sucked out of the room. Joe Ludwig and Chet Falzik and a bunch of other people from Valve stood in front of the room and calmed them all down and said, this is how you're going to do it. Right. And kind of like, here's the path to actually 90 frames per second. And, that was pretty amazing. What those guys were able to do. Nobody leaked, nobody talked about anything. Developing then those base stations and a horizontal, an X and Y axis, laser spinning, as a spread through the room, and then having fiducial markers or, ASIC sensors on a headset. Like for a year, Valve and HTC actually worked together on the angles of these sensors just to hit the headset just right so that we could get that tracking accuracy. And then to have that computational, like where you were in space and time in a VR headset while you were whipping around, like you were still tethered to a 5 meter cable, but it was full room scale. Like once your neck, your spine, and your head is free to roam, you whip around pretty quickly, especially when a zombie's coming for you. But it was super critical. I think solving the tracking for room scale movement for a 5 meter square area, and then solving the problems for controllers and developing new controllers, game interactions, hand interactions, that was all really, really hard stuff, but really fun problems to go work on.
You mentioned zombies, and I just have to share this story. Maybe you've shared it before on the pod, but that first headset, that Vive headset, I think in large part is why we're here today talking to you. Put Brad in that headset, and we were blown away. I remember I tried the DK1 or DK2, and I think I did some roller coaster simulator. I got horribly sick, and I thought, there's no way. then I got the Vive, one of the early, you know, first ones that I could get my hands on, and was blown away. But the zombie story is, I put my dad in VR, and one of the first experiences I put him in was Zombie Training Simulator, which was a great game, kind of paper cutout zombies. And at one point, the zombies kind of rush you all at once. And when that happened, my dad was in my office, and he turns and runs full tilt into the wall. And he was okay. And, you know, shout out to the durability. The controllers, everything was fine, even the full-on collision. But I just remember, for me, for some reason, that was a moment for me that sticks out to me, because my dad is not a video game player. But he was so in it, and he took the headset off and he said, I thought it was real. You know, I thought I was just this instinct, this, you know, primal instinct took over, and I ran. So anyways, but yeah, that first Vive, I put Brad into it, and that's how Arbor started, really.
That's awesome. I remember working with you guys very early on. Some of the early demos, some of the early stories of people taking out foam tiles, you know, we were like, wow, we built a really good controller. Because that controller went through a lot of ceiling tiles, and that thing withheld.
You know what didn't hold up? What didn't hold up? Because we started with in location-based entertainment with an arcade, and the thing that we had to replace all the time were the flat-screen TVs. Yeah, so the controllers would break the TVs. The controllers are fine. It was
we were going to Sam's Club just about every week buying new TVs. Nice.
Yeah, I remember. Putting Jon Favreau in the blue for the first time. And watching him rip the headset off, and like it literally smashed, and we're like, "You broke."
Is that the origin of him using VR for Lion King and other? I know he's
yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was in the Weaver office with Neville Spiteri and the team there. That was the first time he did that.
Were they using Vive trackers mounted to a camera to give them that? Was that the
yeah?
Wow, yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, the tracker story of just how the trackers are being used across, you know, entertainment, TV, all these different ways. I mean, it was being used in so many use cases. It was used on Star Wars movies. It was used on, so many other locations and so many other applications that but we built the whole system open right from the very beginning so that people could, and developers and indies and big game developer teams or entertainment teams could actually go nuts with it. Like, that was the whole design, right? And Valve was actually instrumental, you know, in doing that in the very beginning too, just to kind of give them props. Like, they were like, if you want this to grow and you want the developer community to really attach to it, this is how you got to keep it open. You got to keep it easy. You know, you got to keep updating and listening to the developers. And, you know, they were really, really great, you know, in those early days of the Vive days, because we were such a, you know, hardware company and communications company. And they were really the guidance, you know, of like how to work with developers and content creators. And it was a great experience working with those guys. Like, that was an amazing partnership.
So, you know, we also, you know, had a similar start in the entertainment space, like I said, and then we made a pivot into enterprise. Obviously, we're a tiny company compared to HTC. But maybe talk about that transition from consumer and entertainment into what your focus is today.
Yeah, well, that was fun, you know, to go from being a smartphone company. Like, we were a B2B2C company. So we sold phones to carriers, operators, right? AT&T, Verizon, at the time, Sprint, T-Mobile. We were very, very successful. But we saw what was happening in the market there between Apple, Samsung, market dominance, and things of that factor. I mean, Apple has an overwhelming, you know, we think they have this overwhelming, you know, majority of smartphone distribution. They do in the U.S., but not globally, right? Android is the overwhelming majority globally as an operating system for our Android, you know, devices were very, very good. We were Android experts, but then we were like, okay, you know, what are we going to do next, right? And we really have this very strong theory about, you know, we were making smartphones well before they were called smartphones. We made the first touchscreen smartphone, the first 4G LTE smartphone, the first Google Android smartphone, first 5G device. You know, we turned on every carrier 4G LTE network in the world. Like, I sat in a room with the CTO of AT&T, and they said, thank you for turning on our 4G LTE network. So, like, AT, you know, HTC is this amazing what I would call innovation contribution company. And so we've done a lot for the industry and for developers and content creators. But when you think about now, like, we built this new brand, right? HTC Vive, and we had this blue triangle, and we're like, our, you know, Cher, I remember being in the meetings with Cher, and we're like, what is the purpose? You know, why does this company exist? Why does the Vive exist? And, you know, we came up with, you know, innovation, you know, technology, innovation, and humanity, right, is the three pillars of that blue triangle. And so, so much of like everything we wanted to do was actually take our technology, put it together in innovative ways, create content, you know, services, solutions that would actually improve humanity, right? And really, like, that's the purpose of the whole Vive business, right? And it was like, this is why we exist. Then we go into B2C with Valve as our partner. But think about those early days, like, the only people that knew how to create a 360-degree environment was people like yourself in the entertainment industry, right, that knew how to create a really fun, engaging, you know, environment. And indies were the only ones that were really willing to take the chance on creating that content, right? And Steam, with their 100 and at the time, I think 120 million active users, you know, and I think they were like 30 to 50 million congruent users, depending on the holiday time frame or a weekend or a weeknight. You know, they had 8 million active, they had 8 million PCs on their network that could run a Vive. So that was like the original addressable market in terms of like who we were going after. And so, you know, while other people were trying to, like, you know, be on the cover of Time magazine and be like the you know, the brand that is bringing all this thing to happen, like, we're just very, very laser focused on B2C consumers on Steam, you know, and the users that already had a PC, because asking someone to buy a $3,000 or $1,000 PC with a GPU in addition to an $800 Vive headset was like, oh my God, this is so much to bear, right? And then here, now take these base stations and screw them into a wall and have this wire hanging down. Your wife is going to love it.
she did.
So there is, you know, the initial days was fraught with you know, some friction and some hurdles, right, for mass adoption. But we really just focused on those high-end Steam gamers, you know, as our initial B2C. And then, you know, but in 2014, Cher, myself, you know, we were like, listen, we're going to focus on automotive. We're going to focus on design and architecture. And we're going to focus on all these other areas. But none of them had ever seen Unity or Unreal. They had no 3D, you know, graphics. They had nobody, right? Like, knew how to create any content whatsoever or create, you know, training simulations and things of that nature. And so we really started, 30% of the dev kits between HTC and Valve went to architecture, automotive space. Like, we went to professional customers in 2015 and 16, for sure. That was always the part of the mission from day one. I think we've seen a lot of companies pivot in that direction because, you know, consumer wasn't, you know, pushing the way that they wanted to. But, you know, just in general, yeah, we saw this, we've been always focused on enterprise as a growing market, but the technology knowledge level, development cycle, very long, you know, in 2016, 17 for enterprise and B2B and commercial customers.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, our initial kind of purpose also was to help people live more meaningful lives, you know, remove the friction to help people live more meaningful lives through this new technology. And, you know, also starting in gaming entertainment for us, right? It's kind of this interesting, okay, well, that is that. And so we tried, and not that gaming and entertainment is not important. I mean, we always say that, right? And I think one of the really cool things, like Will said, about that original Vive is I do think that was the gateway headset for most people in the industry today. You know, I mean, a lot of people today in an arcade put on a Vive, you know, back in 2018. And that's what got them excited about VR today, which is really cool. And it's cool to think about all of us getting to be a part of that in some way. But even for us, it was this push at different points during those early years. Okay, we want to push into education. We want to push into enterprise. And so much uphill, right? There wasn't either the content wasn't there. Schools didn't want to have to jack with tethered devices, et cetera, right? And so at a certain point for us, it's like, you know, great that we have this idealistic, you know, use of the technology, but we're just not big enough to drive that type of adoption. And so, you know, but for us, you know, I guess it was 2021, we made the pivot into enterprise. And like you said, it's like, okay, companies maybe early on were kind of like, what is this? I mean, we're seeing across the board, from our perspective, it feels like every major company on the planet right now is moving their training into VR because it's so effective, so powerful. You know, I mean, we all know the ROI. So one thing you mentioned just a few minutes ago, in the early days, your open approach with Valve. And I think that's an interesting topic today, with just the different approaches from different, you know, groups in VR. So just curious, how do you think about being open today, 2024, as you attack the enterprise market?
It's still really critical. It's still really important. I think too, like, just to kind of like lean into that, like there's two pieces, right? One, being open, super critical, so that companies don't feel super confined, right? Like, companies need to look at, what is Apple doing? What is Meta doing? What is Pico doing? What is Lenovo doing? What is HTC doing? We're all solving different problems. The headsets all have different little innovative moves, right? You know, Meta puts out a headset with, you know, mixed reality pass-through. We put out a headset with mixed reality pass-through and a laser depth sensor, right? So that you can measure everything in the room, right? So everybody's looking at different problems and saying, what can we do? And it's like kind of like the early days of smartphones. Like, we are all pushing each other, which is very, very healthy for the industry. You know, it's super interesting too. Like, I mean, Apple, you know, put out their headset and it's like, yeah, the pass-through frame rate, you know, and speed, you know, is great, but they designed it to be great when you're sitting still or standing still. Like, we designed that pass-through so that you can walk around, you know, at full walkable speed, right? So like, we all made different trade-offs. You see the different use cases and you see the different decisions that the companies are all making, but the technology is actually not that far from each other. So that's super interesting. I think companies need to be working with open systems and not closed systems. I think that's important for them to then benefit from what it is they're going to use. It also makes it easier for IT infrastructure company, you know, the CIO, right? And the IT group, right? Like, how are we going to incorporate this into our organization? A funny story, our first sale to a defense contractor, I think it took me 3 months to sell 3 headsets. I mean, that's how bad we were at doing B2B and enterprise, you know, back in 2016 and 17. It was pretty rough. I mean, now we're very good at it. You know, it's look, we can go work with basically any company, almost any government in the world and deploy a corporate solution. But I think too, like, leaning into like what you guys are doing now today, what we were doing, how we were thinking about it. An open ecosystem, there's two reasons you do that. One is you can allow, you know, healthy competition, healthy innovation. You allow developers to work across headsets and across platforms. And if Unity is working with OpenXR and HTC is using OpenXR and Lenovo and Pika and everybody's using OpenXR, there's now an ease of use for the developers that are developing for that corporate entity. I hate to say it, you know, I want people to know why the Vive exists, you know, and what our purpose is. And because people buy why you exist, they don't buy what you make, or they buy the cheap thing because they don't have enough budget to do what they want to do. But at the end of the day, you know, people buy why you're there, right? Buy why your solution exists. And then, you know, how easy is it to incorporate into their environment? How easy to control it, secure it? Develop across it, right? And, you know, will it work with other headsets? Will it work with other platforms, right? And you want to keep yourself as flexible as possible for, I think, B2B and commercial enterprises. As soon as you start bringing them friction, you're out. you lock them down and they're going to be like, nope, you know, this isn't going to work for us, right? And so you want to work with their existing infrastructure. I mean, just working with an existing product, right? Like, headsets, you know, the metaverse should be working with iPads and Android phones and iPhones and PCs and whatnot, right? And Macs, right? You should be able to work inside of the metaverse across a slew of different products and meet their security criteria.
Yeah, totally agree. I think, I mean, we talk about removing friction all the time. We also talk about, you talk about selling in initially to some of these big groups. And I think you oftentimes have one shot at a first impression, and making sure that initial experience is clean and frictionless is so important. And obviously, you know, there's the closed ecosystem, or, you know, it's tempting from a business perspective, but it does feel like at this stage of the industry, it's just not healthy. And I mean, even, you know, on our platform, a large, high percentage of our customers are using devices from multiple manufacturers, to exactly to your point, for different use cases. And I think, you know, the enterprise market is different than the consumer space. And in enterprise, there is an expectation that things are open and that there is an interlock. And I think we all have to lean into that, at least at this stage of the game.
Well, too, you know, when you see the pressure that's happening on the consumer side of the market, right, like you have price sensitivity, right, to get to deployment. And you have, you know, one company kind of setting the market expectations of what the pricing of this technology is. That's not the price of this technology. That is a loss model, right? Like, great that somebody can do it. We're not going to do that as a company. But when you look at enterprise and you look at the B2B area, a company can deploy a platform. They can control the devices. They can improve the human performance, right? They can design better, collaborate better. They can train better. They can, I mean, I have white papers through the roof of stats and performance, whether it's healthcare, engineering, automotive, anything that you want to train, you can do more efficiently in XR. The retention's better. Skills fade is decreased over time. You have better trained doctors, better trained everybody, first responders. And now you have better therapy, right? So now we can actually start, you know, like our brand, you know, one of the things that we're working on is like first responders and all the different training solutions we can do with these people. You know, and I went to a conference with Axon, who's one of our partners recently. And one of the big questions at that conference from one of the keynote speakers was, here's all of these police officers. Here's all these safety officers. You have over 1 million safety officers in the U.S. and decreasing numbers. And you go, well, who's taking care of them, right? They're out there taking care of everybody else, but who's taking care of them? And, you know, these products and the infrastructure to deploy them and control them and deploy actual valuable solutions, like that's the mission, right? Like there's really good that we can do that is, you know, it's okay to be profitable. That's a good thing, last I checked. It's okay to deploy solutions that increase, you know, efficiencies, bring costs down, you know, faster decision making, better training for people, and then deliver that to a sector of consumers that really benefits from it, right? Like now you have, why do brands exist in the space? Meeting a mission, they're delivering products and services at a profit that then benefits that company and brings their costs down. It's a win-win for everybody. It doesn't have to be a subsidy and loss, right? Like that's another model for another solution for another user. But what we're doing, I think, you know, our brand alignment to the execution to the, you know, we report to the shareholders, right? That's our job. And so, while everybody wants it to be cheaper and all those things, I mean, it will come down. But I'll tell you what, like we already know how the prices will come down and how you get to those lower prices. But you have to innovate your way there. You don't subsidize your way there. Nobody in the history of consumer technology has ever subsidized them their way to mass adoption. Sorry.
You know, the Axon use case is one of my favorites. And at Christmas, when my relatives ask what I do, I'll share about Axon as one of the use cases. Their vision to make the bullet obsolete and all the work they're doing with police officers around North America. It's amazing. I'm curious and if anybody listening doesn't know this already, I'm sure you do, but I mean, HTC is responsible for some of the largest deployments in the world, deep in enterprise, deep in government contracting side, on the side of things. I'm curious, for an XR champion in an organization looking at choosing a headset for either a pilot or going to scale, what are some of the differentiators that you talk about as they're trying to navigate that landscape that you mentioned earlier?
I think you have to, you know, depending on the company, depending on the organization, depending on the use case, you know, they have to think about a bunch of their priorities. Like, do they want to use it for training? Do they want to use it for what type of training? Hardened training, you know, procedural training. Do they want to use it for, you know, soft skills training? Do they want to use it for collaboration and decision making or analytics and data reviews and 3D models? Like, there's so many use cases now where we can bring a huge amount of value. But I think a lot of companies have to think about privacy. They have to think about security. They have to think about country of origin. You know, if you're a government entity, a U.S. government entity, or part of that, if you were part of a state program, a school district that's part of a state program, if you're part of a federal program, you get federal money. Your country of origin, really important, what you're putting inside of your environment. So think about that. But we also think about, you know, just the ease of deployment, right? Like, how do you control the devices? I mean, what's great about you guys and why we love partnering with you is, you know, we actually have like a small MDM that we created, but it's mostly for small businesses like SMBs that only want to manage our headset. And then mostly for like a pilot program or a smaller program where they're testing it, you know, POC or a pilot program. They come to work with a company like you because, okay, great. I can deploy now multiple headsets. I can deploy accessories. I can deploy across brands. I can deploy, and it will integrate with existing IT infrastructure, right? And so it has much more robustness and scalability and features. But companies really have to think about not only the privacy and the security, country of origin, the functionality of the devices. Like, we have two devices that one is meant for like a lighter environment, right? And a more comfortable environment, can be worn like glasses. And then we have a more robust, you know, headset. And then we have still our PC VR headset, but our all-in-one headsets, we have two variants of it. One of them is meant for more of a classroom, more of a robust, I would call it human abuse. You know, we know how to make those types of devices. We made smartphones for a lot of years, and we pick them up and drop them all the time. But I think about robustness, feature functionality, reliability, quality, things of that nature. But, you know, a lot of the headsets are pretty similar right now in terms of a feature functionality. But I don't think people really buy, you know, what a product is all the time. I think they buy why. Like, that's the most important thing. And I think you want to work with a company you're going to trust. They're not, you know, going to take your data, right? If you're a corporate entity and you're using biometrics off of that headset, if, you know, eye tracking or facial tracking or interactions or specific type of training that's, you know, to your environment, that data is that company's data, right? And it needs to meet that criteria, and nobody else should have access to that data. Privacy and security for the enterprise space is paramount. It's critical. It doesn't matter if you pass like simple ISO testing, right? It matters what you do with their data, how you protect their brand, and are you a trusted company then to go do business with? We do business with the U.S. government, anywhere from defense contractors to healthcare companies. We're in every medical school possible. We know how critical data is to a corporate entity and protecting it for them. So we're not even touching it. Like, it's not ours. So don't touch it. Don't go near it. Yeah.
I love it. You know, you mentioned Axon, and I thought, I don't normally do this, but is there another customer just to kind of help for somebody who either, again, at the pilot stage or going to scale, to understand some of the nuances, the decisions that need to be made, and even how they would interact with a hardware company like HTC and what that experience is like versus, I don't know, going and buying stuff off the shelf at Best Buy and trying to figure out some kind of a consumer headset in an enterprise setting?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, we have companies across aerospace, DoD, financial services now is a really big sector, compliance training, job training, soft skills training. We work with a lot of the banks right now. One of the reasons that the banking industry actually reached out to us and started contacting us was because on the DoD and federal side, we have three products with three ATOs, which is called authority to operate. That means you're meeting high security criteria with not only your physical hardware, but with your software, which means basically you're safe to go work with. And so financial industry, which is, I would say, higher criteria of regulation than many of my government contractors and government entities. And they are very serious about it. Several of them are part of the Fed. Their criteria is critical. So a lot of companies are thinking about it from that point of view first. Like, you know, how do I go work? You know, what companies, what brands should I go work with? And then, what is the criteria then that I can deploy? And can I even bring them into my company, right? And can I test them? And so, yeah, we focus on a lot of that initially. We have pilot programs where you can buy a certain amount of devices and then you get access to all the features and services. You know, the other thing too about HTC is like we actually have a what we call the Viveverse. You know, I think it's competitive to, you know, maybe somebody that's looking at like Meta Horizons or the Mesh solution from Microsoft, or I think Qualcomm had a solution. Everybody's looking at the platform solution. But we created a very easy to use solution for one user up to hundreds of thousands of users that can go into a collaboration space. They can do keynotes, they can do meetings. It was integrated with Microsoft Teams a while ago and Microsoft products as well as like Zoom. So you could do your meeting invites and your meeting in there. And then, sorry, I had a little pop-up. I'm like putting my finger in front of the camera. So professional. But just in general, yeah, we work with a lot of companies to come in, start a POC, start a pilot, get access to Viveverse, test it from a security standpoint, test it from a functionality standpoint. We can work with partners like you guys to integrate, you know, Arbor into, you know, Viveverse, you know, users so that they can deploy. We have longer extended warranties, you know, for our customers because they're going to deploy them for 3 to 5 years, you know, or 2 to 5 years. In some of these deployments. So companies also want to know, are you going to end of life this thing in a year? Do I have to certify another device and then incorporate that into my infrastructure? Like putting a company or corporate environment in a constant loop of like, oh, evaluation and certification approval. They don't like that, especially government entities. So they want to have trust, right? That they can see a roadmap. They can see, you know, when they're going to deploy things of that nature. So, yeah, we really look at all those different scenarios and whether they're using it in a classroom environment or an LBE, location-based entertainment, multi-user environment. Yeah, we really try to make ourselves just a one-stop shop where you can come in, you can get us, talk to us, and we can deploy a comprehensive solution for our customers.
You know, we have really enjoyed, there's several large accounts we've worked on with you guys, and it's just been great. We've appreciated your flexibility and willingness to work together to make it work with some of these larger deployments. You have, as you've shared, you personally and HTC also have a rich history, you know, in technology and in VR. So as we move to a kind of a close here, I'd love to hear your take on kind of what's next? Like, what's the next 18 months look like, the next few years? Where is VR going? Does AR actually ever become a thing? Let me hear your take on it.
Yeah, sure. Well, where things are going, you know, we've already incorporated 5G technology into the headsets, you know, from an accessory standpoint. Everybody keeps asking the question, like, you know, when are we going to get these things cheaper? You know, are they going to be connected more easily? Things of that nature. From a history standpoint, like, just to make our hand tracking work more effectively, we created those wrist trackers. The wrist trackers then ended up being used on a whole bunch of peripherals and accessories and a bunch of stuff. And it's kind of funny. Some people always kind of like poo-poo some of those little in-between technologies. But we actually deploy stuff like that all the time just to kind of help us get to the next stage. Before I wrap, I want to go back to one of my first intros of somebody that did a demo and tell a quick story about that. So I'm my brain is there, so remind me at the end. But where things are going though is we're absolutely going to incorporate the 5G technology into the headsets. It'll very likely be, you know, incorporated into the rear housing, you know, the batteries. Like right now we have the ability to create a 5G battery that can be replaced on the back of the headset. So you can have it in Wi-Fi mode or Wi-Fi 6 mode or tethered mode or have it in a 5G connected mode. So now you can, you know, we've created 5G boxes where you can actually run 12 to 15 users off of one box. You can deploy that anywhere. If you're a forward-looking base and you need to do training on equipment out in the field, we have a solution for that. So 5G connectivity is, and then 6G connectivity. 6G is coming in 2030. But where things are going is we will make these headsets connected. They will continue. We will then virtualize more of the products and hardware that's in the headsets into an edge network and into a cloud infrastructure. That takes BOM and that takes materials out of a wearable. Now we get to smaller headsets. Now we get to smaller wearables. Now we get to lighter products. And when you have less things in those products, they cost less. And that's how you get to a lower priced product. You actually innovate your way there. You don't actually just lose money, you know, $250 a headset and say, innovation, that's a bunch of malarkey. But I just think in general, like you innovate your way there from a connectivity standpoint. And that's where we're taking so much of our like smartphone days and knowledge architecture. I don't even know how many hundreds of thousands of man hours of knowledge that we have in the wireless connectivity industry, how these devices then will connect. I mean, we have 5G boxes that can connect to any carrier network, any fiber backhaul, or to a satellite infrastructure. So it can backhaul to, a number of different satellite companies, right? And so you can have connectivity on an oil and gas platform in the middle of the ocean, right? And you can have 5G headsets out there and you can be training remotely. So like that's where things are going, like, but that's actually right now, like that's happening now. That's things that we can do now. But I do think that with infrastructure and all the work that like your company has done, our company has done to deploy at scale, I think we're going to start seeing in the, you know, 500,000 deployments to a couple hundred thousand, you know, deployments of headsets into, you know, corporate entities and into government entities, and where these headsets will be deployed at scale. They're going to be used for mental health. They're going to be used for suicide prevention. They're going to be used for design and engineering collaboration. They're going to be used for training. It's a really effective tool. And when you think about our brand, like technology, innovation, humanity, like this is everything that we were meant to do. So that's why we're so focused on, you know, doing it the way that we're doing it today. That's where it's absolutely going. Now, AR, just so you know, we were working on AR glasses in 2012 and 13, and the problems were vast and challenging. But the main problem for AR wasn't so much like glasses and field of view and just this one little thing or cameras embedded into a headset or glasses. It was connectivity and what the hell are you going to do with it? Sorry for my language, but like, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do? And so, what made, you know, oil so great, right? It was the railroad systems, right? It's, it's the old model of like, what is the railroad to deliver the content? Well, 5G networks, 6G networks is the railroad system to actually get, you know, a sub 10 millisecond round trip on 90 frames per second content to display in front of your eye on glasses. Everyone's like, well, what's the killer app? And it's like, well, 5G networks is the killer app, you know, like super boring, no one cares, but they just want it to work. But reality is for AR glasses to really go out at scale and for developers to have a very healthy economy to then address a very broad, you know, user and content, you have to be able to deliver that content ubiquitously in any environment where they are. And that is an infrastructure of a network to be able to do that. That's what we're solving today with 5G connectivity and mixed reality headsets that can do a version of AR and VR and mixed reality. So like all these problems are being solved now. I think people, you know, it's, hopefully they can appreciate like the level of innovation and technology that's happening today that's going to allow that kind of ubiquitous scale and adoption of AR glasses in the future. AR glasses, 100% going to happen. They're going to be awesome. I hope they're used for good and not just limbic system, you know, draining on your brain applications. I mean, I'm an addict, you know, on some of the platforms like anybody else, but you know, hopefully we can use that technology also for a lot of highly valuable use cases, you know, and benefiting humanity in some way. So I think that that mission needs to stay strong and why we exist and why we do the innovation that we're doing. So, you know, I got into communications, you know, coming out of college and worked in Lucent Bell Labs and, you know, that organization because I thought the world will always need communications, right? And I could have went into banking. And, you know, I had a really smart professor that said to me, world won't always need bankers, but we'll always need communications. And I was like, ooh, I'm going into communications. So it was Dr. Haseen. He was my international finance professor. He probably also guided me there because I think I got a B minus in his class. So.
Maybe that's not, your future's not in banking.
Yeah, that's funny. Right. That's, Mr. O'Brien, I think you need to think about communications. Right, it's all coming back around.
Right, making sure that, that we do have bankers. Well, I definitely like the sound of 500,000 device deployments. That's exciting. And you use the word malarkey, and I think that's going to be my goal going forward. Is that we slip that word into every show, Will? So let's make a note, and we'll see if we can do that. but good. Tell it. You said you had a story before we close here. So hit the story.
Oh yeah, you know I. No. I remember it. I think I was, you know, when I was talking about kind of the early days, 2000, you know, the intro days. And I remember Mobile World Congress, 2016. It was just before the actual launch. And, you know, we put everybody, all this press and media, you know, through these demos, right? And, you know, Chet Falzik, what a tremendous, amazing human being. He has an amazing following, and he's one of the, I think, you know, one of the Half-Life writers and has BAFTA awards. And I mean, he's a brilliant guy. But anyway, he's a tremendous person. We sat down and we wrote down headlines on whiteboards, right, in the Valve offices of, like, what do we want to accomplish, right? Like, what do we want press and media to say? And one of the initial demos we were going to do was Tilt Brush, which I think, you know, Google ended up acquiring and is now called something else. But I mean, you can basically paint with rainbows or lightning or things of that nature. And one of the headlines that we wrote was I painted with rainbows. Right. We were like, wouldn't it be so cool if we got press, you know, to put that in a headline? And I think we got Scott Stein from CNET. To actually, like, I'm not sure if he put that in the headline, but he came out of the demo and I was standing in the hallway. He looked at me and he goes, I painted with rainbows. And I just remember going, yes, mission accomplished. Right. And so, like, it's, you know, since painting with rainbows to now, you know, suicide prevention and like doing amazing impacts in like people's lives and training doctors and nurses and you know, really being a, you know, I mean, we did an amazing thing with Penumbra, right? Like that was another huge deployment for us, and that's stroke rehabilitation, right? Like working with rehab centers for patients. And, you know, we work with companies like Mind VR to work in senior care facilities. Like that, the largest population of human beings in the United States today is our boomer, right, audience. And like, that is the biggest population. Like, who can we help with these applications and with these products and with these services? And like, you know, you got to focus on like where you can do the good, where you can make a huge impact. And then what is the right audience? And like senior care facilities, huge impact, you know, that we're making in that space. So really good stuff. Really, really great.
Well, this has been great, Dan. I know you're a busy man, so we really appreciate it. And we look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for all the work you guys are doing and helping us. And I look forward to doing a lot more together.
Well, man, super impressive. I think hearing some of the backstory at HTC and how they got into VR to begin with, and even their approach to things, you know, it's like they're not chasing flash or hype. They're doing the work. They're innovating. They've got the long game in mind. And I leave that interview just feeling really encouraged about where VR is going to go over time.
I agree. It was fun stepping back in time, rewinding a bit, remembering the early days with the you know, before standalone, when everything was cables and base stations and life was beautiful and simple. But yeah, I agree. I mean, if I'm, you know, responsible for developing an XR program at my organization, I'm definitely checking out the Vive headsets. I mean, there's just a number of things that feel very dialed in for the enterprise in a way that is unique. And I liked how you said that, you know, it's a big landscape and there's a lot of options, and it's worth checking out what they're working on and getting your hands on a Vive headset and giving them a shot.
Yeah. Very, very thoughtful in their approach. Well, as always, we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us, and make sure you check us out wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we will see you next time.